The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Now, I got up this morning. I made my way out to Weston Airport, which is out there near Searlebridge and Leixlip. And I believe half of it is in County Dublin and the other half is in County Kildare. Anyway, the reason I was there was to meet up with the Royal Jordanian Falcons. And they are taking part in the Bray Air Display this weekend, which is obviously in Bray. It's on Saturday and Sunday. And they've taken part before and they're back by popular demand. And they do acrobatics in aeroplanes. And you know, you get requests and you get mentions of these things in the office all the time. And more often than not, nothing ever happens. So a couple of weeks ago, somebody said to me, would you go up in one of those acrobatic airplanes and do loop-the-loops and all that? And I say, yeah, whatever. Thinking that it would never happen, because it often doesn't. And there I ended up this morning standing alongside Gazi, who's the Director of Operations with Royal Jordanian Falcons, and him giving us a brief and telling us how to put on a parachute, and more importantly, how to open a parachute in the event of an accident or an emergency. And then most of the briefing actually was taken up with the sick bag. And I thought, this is joke, you know, sick bag. They'll be talking about the sick bag just for the laugh to make us feel more comfortable. And then I was introduced to my pilot. Well, not my pilot, but the man who was flying the plane that I was going to be sitting in, Captain Dereid Al-Lawama. Lovely man. And he's a retired colonel from the Jordanian Air Force. And then I think they were trying to put out feelers to see if myself and Mae from the team were queasy and how we'd react to various things like loop-de-loops and flying upside down. And then they went off into a bit of a huddle and they decided what they were going to do. And then four airplanes took off together. It's an amazing sight to see. And you're in one of them and you're strapped in good-o, and you have your parachute on and you have communications with the captain. And they're quite loud. So we took off. And before very long, we were in formation, diamond formation. It is amazing. So myself and Captain Dereid were in the rear plane, and then there was one to our left, one to our right, and one immediately in front of us. And I'm probably imagining things or probably embellishing things, but I'd say if you're on the tip of one of the wings, you could touch the other airplane. That's how close we were. And I was looking around, sort of coming to terms with my surroundings, loud enough. Yeah, comfortable enough, looking down, green fields, that's lovely. Is that Selbridge or is that Lucan or is that Leixlip? Yeah, you know, all that sort of thing. And a bit at the back of my mind going, when are they going to do the stuff like? When are they going to do the acrobatics? And how will it feel? So then there was a bit of banking to the left, banking to the right, and then it came. the loop. Oh, my word. And there probably was an S word in there, luckily. The microphones couldn't pick up anything over the noise of the engines, so it's there, but it's inaudible. And up. And I thought that was bad, and I was just coming to terms with that. And then upside down. We were flying upside down. So between me and the ground, 4,000 feet below, there was just a bit of perspex. And you're upside down. And then he's going, are you okay, Ray? Are you okay? And you're supposed to give the thumbs up. And then the G-force is such that I can't bring my hands up to give him the thumbs up. So I said, yeah, amazing. It's amazing. And it was amazing. It was mind-blowing. It was an adrenaline rush. It was nothing like I've ever experienced before. And I feel very privileged and lucky to have been up in that airplane this morning and to experience what I experienced. It's a thrill that I probably won't match again in my life. And it's taken me... It's just out of this world. And those men get to do it every week as they tour around the world with the Royal Jordanian Falcons. It's just something else. Maeve is coming in later on to tell her version of events. I was very pleased with myself at the end that I didn't use my sick bag, and Maeve was very pleased with herself at the end that she did use her sick bag. So she was holding up with pride. There it is. There's the sick bag. the odd thing was that I was invited into the National Flight Centre, which is out there in Weston, and they, a lot of the young pilots that would be flying your Ryanair and Aer Lingus planes would have trained in the National Flight Centre or are being trained and they will fly in the future. And they have a 737 simulator out there, and Kelly and Ray brought me on a little trip. We took off from Dublin Airport in the simulator and we flew out just out into Dublin Bay and back, did a UE and came back in and landed. And it's amazing that the technology, the simulator. But the odd thing is, I felt queasy after that. Didn't feel queasy after the real thing. But there's something about the simulator, because it isn't real and your body isn't really been, you know, shoved around the way it should be to reflect what you're seeing, that it made me slightly queasy. But thanks to Ryan Hanrahan out there and everybody in the National Flight Centre, and good luck to everybody who's studying there. I was in an extra 330 LX acrobatic or aerobatic aeroplane today, and the boss man, Ghazi Sadoun, is coming in to talk me through what I went through, if you know what I mean. Ellen was with us as well, and we go pros a go-go there, so she's putting together a little Instagram video that you can watch it, and if you're from that neck of the woods, you can see if you can spot your house or field or whatever. Amazing. And that's all because the Bray Air Display is happening this weekend out in Bray. Congratulations to our Jen and her now fiancé, Eric, who got engaged over the weekend. And there's a big ring, an inflatable sort of ring, balloon type thing in the office. So everybody's coming over to congratulate Jen. And it got everybody talking about rings and wedding rings and engagement rings and losing them. And I suppose it's a big thing if you've been married for a lifetime to hold on to the one ring. Because, you know, I know myself, you take it off if you're doing anything with chickens. Like, if I'm cutting up chicken, I always take the ring off and I put it down. And then the odd night, particularly this time of the year, you get a bit hot and you know, the ring finger gets a bit swollen. So you take off the ring for comfort and you put it down. Luckily, so far, it's always been where I've left it. But I would imagine then, you know, I found a wedding ring in a swimming pool. Siobhan upstairs lost her rings as an engagement and wedding ring while she was doing the gardening. Somebody else said that they were trying to get something out of a freezer one day and the diamond fell off and they've never found it. And over the years on various radio shows, we have reunited people with lost and found rings. And we've been happy to do that. And it's great when people get it back because they're so appreciative, because it is something special. And the replacement ring isn't the one. It wasn't there on the day. It wasn't the one that was in the little pocket of the best man's waistcoat. It isn't the one that you placed gently on your husband's or wife's finger and said, "I do." So that's a very special thing, isn't it? It's a very special piece of jewellery. And if you lose it, probably irreplaceable. But you must have a story. If you have a ring story, we'll take it from you today. 51551, ray@rte.ie. The heat wave continues, particularly in mainland Europe and England. I heard John Kenny reporting on the cricket today, saying that it was going to be 35 degrees at Lord's. Ireland taking on England in the first official test since the Irish cricket team got promoted up to a certain level of cricket. And I just read the headline from The Guardian. It sounds good. Haven't got a clue what it means, but it sounds good for Ireland. Ireland at the crease after bowling England out for 85 on day one. Now, is that good news? It sounds like it's good news. England seemingly fell apart and Ireland played well, so well done to them. And we'll keep an eye on that. It's official. Dad jokes are funny. I've been guilty of the odd dad joke in my time. But they are funny if you feel you're laughing with other people. So researchers at the University of London have done research on dad jokes, which is funny in itself. Yes, John, I think we'll definitely, there's a lot of talk about those dad jokes. I think we should definitely subject it to scientific rigour and see if they're actually funny, if anybody thinks they're funny or not. And then, of course, by applying science to anything, you'll take the crack out of it, won't you? But they've done this, and what they've found is that when the jokes are told dry, people don't find them funny. But when you add a laughter track, that's when they become funny, because people feel, is it pressure? Is it wanting to fit in? They feel they have a license to laugh because everybody else is laughing. So we will try a few, we'll try a few dry first. I apologise in advance. What is brown and sticky? A stick. Yeah, you see, that's not funny. And then you go, what is brown and sticky? A stick. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yeah, yeah, I know, I know, I know, I know. Why are you there? Why are you there? What's big and green and would kill you if it fell out of a tree? Big and green, kill you if it fell out of a tree. A snooker table. Snooker, that's it. I know. Snooker table. That's very funny. That's very funny. Very funny. Yeah, yeah. What did the fish say when he swam into a wall? Damn! Damn. Listen, I've one more for you. One more for you. No, okay, thank you. I've one more for you. One more. Okay, here you go. Here you go. This is the most popular one in our house at the moment. Why did the chicken cross the playground? Why did the chicken cross the playground? To get to the other slide. Thank you. I will not be performing at the Vodafone Comedy Festival in the Ivy Gardens this weekend. For obvious reasons. I was talking about all of that thing and somebody mentioned upstairs, you have to play a bit of that.
Those magnificent men in the flying machines.
There you go. There you go. Now, what's that from? If you know, answers please to 51551 radio.rte. Siobhan says, we were on a cruise in Jordan 5 years ago as it was the first cruise ship to go to the port in Jordan. The Jordanian government gave us a flyover by those four planes just for our cruise. They were fantastic. It lasted about 10 minutes. We felt very honoured and privileged. Kind regards, Siobhan. And it's not a wedding ring story, but my mother passed an eternity ring down to me, absolutely priceless, and I lost it on a night out almost a year ago and now I still haven't told her. Oops. Oops is right. How are you going to break that news to her? It's going to weigh heavy on your mind. So just sit her down over a cup of tea and a scone and just blurt it out. Blurt it out. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Dana Ross. I'm coming out on RTE Radio 1. 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Chitty chitty bang bang. Thank you.
Those magnificent men in the flying machines. They know
what to do. Is it? Yeah, it is. Geraldine O'Sullivan from Ballinhassan, County Cork, says it is. In regards to warm weather, it's definitely going to heat up now in the UK with Boris Johnson in charge. I read a scathing editorial in the Irish Times today about him. And a lot of people are saying very critical things about Bojo. Even the fact that he's called Bojo sounds like a clown's name. Maybe that's the reason he's called Bojo. Words like lazy, unserious, incompetent. Scary is a word I'd use. The whole prospect is quite scary. And on rings, that woman didn't lose an eternity ring. Turns out it was only a temporary ring. Are you allowed to do blonde jokes anymore? I can't remember the last time I heard a blonde joke or a Kerryman joke. But Jen is listening to us while riding the security bicycle at work in Minnesota in USA, and she's giving us a blonde joke just for old time's sake, Jen, and because you're a woman, I suppose. Two blondes walked into a bar. The brunette ducked. Anyway, enough of that already. Was on a picnic with my friends at Goat's Island near Ardmore, County Waterford on the 22nd of February this year. I misplaced my emerald engagement ring and a Victorian diamond cluster ring I inherited from my dear aunt. I've prayed copiously to St. Anthony to no obvious avail yet. Maybe you could help me, please. I miss them terribly. So you're on Goat Island near Ardmore in County Waterford, 22nd February, and you lost your, misplaced your emerald engagement ring and a Victorian diamond cluster ring I inherited from my dear aunt. Wouldn't hold out much hope for that. Hi Ray, on the night my now wife and I got engaged, we were in the Emmett Hotel nightclub in Clonakilty celebrating and everyone was well on. My wife handed the engagement ring to her friend to look at and she dropped it. Panic. No insurance, no ring. The disco was stopped, lights on, and everyone doing a new dance on all fours looking for the ring. No, look, lights back on or off, music and a few long faces at our table. Disco finished an hour later, and just as we were leaving, someone came up to us with the ring. They found it at the far side of the hall, still together now, 25 years married last New Year's Day. That's Paul in Clonakilty. That's a great story, Paul. My sister-in-law has an engagement ring worth more than her house. Works in a beauty salon, and one famous day she took a look at a ring and a diamond was missing. Got in touch with jewellers and they put a price on replacing diamond, another mortgage. But lo and behold, one of the staff in salon found her diamond in clothes dryer. Happy days, happy lady. And was at the Royal Navy Air Show in Yeovil on the 13th of July, just gone. Saw the Royal Jordanian pilots as well as the Red Arrows do their thing, as well as Lancaster bombers, so much more. What a spectacle. Those guys are brilliant. Yes, they are. And I've seen it close up and personal. And you can see what they can do on our Instagram account. Ellen has done a great job in just editing all those clips together from this morning from the various GoPros. And on rings, I lost my engagement ring on leaving work one Friday evening. I only realised the following day over lunch with my then-to-be husband. I made an excuse to leg it to the dentist, I said, and drove the 45 minutes to work where I was lying on the reception floor. When I got home, my husband's only question was, dentist on a Saturday? That was my question as well, but I didn't put it. He still doesn't know. Maybe he might put two and two and dentist on a Saturday together and figure out if he's listening to the radio. Pierre says, we both lost our rings in the first few months of our marriage. My wife lost her ring while swimming and it was never found, as far as we know. I lost mine in the garden of our new house. In those days, the gardens were not laid out. But when my father was preparing the rear garden for a lawn, he found it 2 years later. By that time, we had both replaced our rings and are still together after 45 years of September. That's Pierce. 51551, ray at rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or you can drop us a text on 51551. Now, it's been a great week for our next guest, Ellie Kizzyombe, who shared the news that she has officially been granted residency in this country. Permission to remain. And this comes after Ellie came to Ireland as an asylum seeker, spending years in direct provision and campaigning for migrant rights. Good afternoon, Ellie. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Ray, for having me.
Yes, so today was the day that you got the special stamp on your passport.
Exactly, it is. Yeah, so I've just come out from Innes, that's immigration house, and just straight into the taxi to you.
Great.
Yeah. So great moment, yeah.
So that goes on your Malawi passport,
yeah,
does
so
it?
That goes on my Malawi passport, yeah.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
And that means that you are allowed to stay in this country.
So I'm allowed to stay in the country. I'm allowed to... I'm a free citizen now, as long as I don't cause trouble.
And then when do you get the full stripes? When do you become a full citizen?
I'm not really sure, but I think it's 3.5 years. I think 3.5 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've spoken before, on both occasions.
Yes.
On both occasions, the big topic of conversation was direct provision.
Exactly.
So that's behind you now.
Yeah, it is behind. Should I say it is behind me? No, it isn't behind me. It's going to still there, but you know, like now I have opportunity to actually be part of making it better. So that's a great opportunity there. But direct provision is still there, and you know, I'm a big
course,
part of it.
Of course, but in your story,
so yeah, yes, exactly.
In your story, you can now leave direct provision.
Yeah, I can now leave direct, and I can't wait. Yes. To actually do that.
So what are you most looking forward to?
I mean, I'm just most looking forward to, you know, like continue with the life, you know, being like, you know, a good citizen and continue with my life and, you know, expanding, you know, the work that I've already done, like growing our table and creating more employment. I was joking with my sons because when I was getting the letter, they said, okay, you have to go and seek employment. And I was like, okay, I'm already employing people.
Yes. Tell people, remind people about our table, which is your business.
So our table was a project that I co-founded while I was in direct provision. It was a response to the ban of not allowing asylum seeker to be able to cook. So I co-founded this with Michelle Damodi in a response of campaigning the right to people to make their food and also to be able to volunteer while they're still waiting, and some of them to get employment for those that they got their papers. So now, fortunately enough, we've been really lucky that, you know, like now we campaigned for right Right to Work, because that was also part of Right to Work. So we exercised it really well that, you know, like almost I think a year now we managed to get the Right to Work. So now asylum seekers, many of them are able to go and work. So now we are working with volunteer, but mainly now I'm working with a lot of people that they've got their Right to Work. So that's what our table is. So we used food to break the barriers and to engage people from the Irish community to understand more about direct provision and also to break bread. You know, like people talk a lot when they're eating. Food is great.
Yes.
Food is great.
And is our table actually a cafe?
We've been a pop-up cafe, but it's been like, I've struggled to actually get like a permanent space from the sympathetic landlord. But what I actually did is like, we actually set it as a social enterprise. So I'm able to actually provide a lot of services. Like I cater for conferences, like this coming weekend, we just got a wedding. Like it's a third wedding for our table for another friend of ours, an Irish lady who she's getting married in Rathmines.
Yeah.
So, and also we cater things like food in UCD, universities and conferences. Yeah.
And when you came in the first time, you brought in some of the food you make.
Exactly. And I wanted to bring you a cake today, but I didn't have time.
So what sort of food do you make? It's traditional Malawi?
So it's not traditional Malawi. We make a whole lot of diverse food, and I'm a great cook, and also we get great chefs. So we make food like Irish, English food, Mexican, Portuguese. It's a selection. Like I'm a fan of buffets because by doing so, I can display about 15 different slow cook and healthy meals. So we do cater like the world dishes. Yeah.
Your two sons.
Yes. A boy and a girl.
A boy and a girl. Sorry, your two children.
Yeah.
How do they feel about residency?
My son is like, he's very happy. You know, like they are very happy. I think for every normal child, what they want, it's a great life. And you know, like it's been very, very hard for them to be in direct provision for the past year because we were lucky. We were living in Usher's Quay where it was a safe catering space for the time that they joined me. So they never really got that hit of
direct provision. Okay.
But when we went to Barseskin, it was really a shock for them. And like my daughter, she didn't get out for the most of the time that we lived there. And it was really hard and I could understand them. But they are kids that, you know, they don't complain much. They try to get along. And I was worried about my daughter's education, but she really did well, although I was really worried because she's studying law and she really get out with distinction to her. So like they've done well. And the boy, because he was a little bit behind, he's wrote his leave-in set this year. So we've been grand and we're just so excited to move on. Yeah.
How many people are in direct provision currently?
I think right now I can't give you the number because now we've been receiving a lot of numbers, a huge numbers of people coming in the country. But if I can give you the numbers for 3-5 years ago, I'll tell you like we were 6,000. So like now 5,000 to 6,000. Now we are more than that.
In, in 39 centers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if we have 39 now because we have other places that are emergency accommodation. Mm. Yeah.
I still don't understand why it took so long to process your application.
I'm not really sure how it works that, you know, like these are the things that we can actually help the government to make things better. You know, like there is like, I don't know, like what really happened. The day that I got my papers, there was a huge shift even in me. Like you could see that weight go and just not even want for the things that I've been through for other people to go through the same thing again. So I think there is more ways that we can explore and, you know, like help.
We spoke to you back in January.
Exactly.
Because you had announced that you were running in the local elections.
Exactly, yeah.
For the Social Democrats.
Yeah.
Which you did and you were unsuccessful.
Exactly.
We'll talk about that in a moment.
Yeah.
But after that there were a number of stories about you and there were questioning your story, if you know what I mean. And then I read that you had to leave it until such time as you got residency to clear everything up. So now you have residency, so you can clear everything up.
No, so Ray, you know, like that's another story for another day. But anyway, you know, since I've been living here and even the Justice Ministry and the Justice Department knows my story. The people that they've been around me knows my story and everyone knows my story. So like there was, I can't even get into that, but everyone who has been around me, they know my story. And there's never even a single time that I had made anything intentionally to deceive the Irish people, because you've actually seen the way when I got my papers, the way people, they've actually celebrated me. So, you know, I wouldn't even take that for granted. And I think there is never, ever...
Oh, no, but there's no question over your story now because, you know, the people have gone through your story with a fine tooth comb and they've granted your residency. But I suppose people are curious as to why there was that big hoo-ha back in February.
So I can't even make of that. But, you know, like what I've said, you know, like I'm not a lawyer or I am not qualified.
So is there legal proceedings ongoing?
I can't say like legal proceedings, but, you know, like I've got a very good counsel.
Okay.
And I've got a very good, strong lawyers. And you know, these have been the important people in my life and they've actually supported me and helped me a lot. Okay. And it would be actually very stupid for me to come here and say something that I've just said it.
Right. Well, final question on this then. Final question on this. Will we get the full story eventually?
Very soon.
Soon.
I'm home.
You're writing a book.
Exactly. I'm writing a book and you will be able to get that. And even in a few weeks, I will be releasing a statement just to give people, like, you know, to thank people. Irish people, they've been really, really nice to me. And, you know, like, I'm very, very grateful to the Justice Minister, Charlie Flanagan, you know, for allowing me and the kids to continue our lives. And even the people, they've shown me love. And, you know, like, I don't take this opportunity for granted. I just want to be a true Irish woman that's contributing to our country and loving her home. That's what I want to be.
And now you can get a home.
Now I can get a home.
But like we're hearing every day on the radio and reading in the papers that it's tough out there to get a rental property.
I know it is tough out there, but you know what? In life you always fall and then you get up and dust yourself. I think that's what we are going to do. You know, it's not going to be easy for us and as it has not been easy for everyone, but we just try to make our best. You know, we've always stayed positive and I think that's how we go on. You know, like I'm home ready, so like I'm not in a hurry, I'm not ready. But now it's just to form this life, so whatever happens, we have to get out.
It must have been disappointing enough not to be elected in the local elections.
My granddad said there was always a best and right time for everything. It wasn't the right time. It will be a right time very soon. So let's leave it there.
But it was encouraging to see the diversity of candidates that were elected, wasn't it?
I mean, it was. And even like the campaign, even for me, it was like great. Like I was meeting people. You know, like I remember I was talking to one of the people in our HQ, in my party. We were talking about the constituents that I was running. You know, Dublin City Central, it's not in a city. It's a very difficult constituency because there's a lot of working class and people don't come quite a lot to vote. And even when you're knocking on the door, people aren't interested to speak to politicians. But I was one of them, those lucky politicians, that I could actually sit. And I can tell you, like, people, I know people that they definitely went out and vote just because they met me.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're still a member of the Social Democrats?
Yeah, I am at
so
the moment.
Your granddad said, you know, it was the wrong time this time, but there will be another day, will there? Will there be another day for you in politics?
It will be another day. You know, like, I'm a part of the community. I'm a part of our society. I'm an Irish woman. I have to do justice to my country. So that's what I'm going to do.
And your daughter and son,
yes.
When you get citizenship, do they automatically get it or do they have to apply individually?
No. So they got theirs. So that's why I got mine on the 15th of... I got my news on the 15th of July, which was a Monday, a week before the day that I did announce. But then I didn't announce it because even at that time, I just got a call from my lawyers who even himself, he was just waiting to receive the letter to tell me. So they just got the letter and then said that to me, but I haven't got for the kids. So I wasn't really, really sure if that was like, okay, should I scream? Should I jump? Then I look at the kids and I'll be like, mommy's like in this position. And they'll be like, oh, what happened? So I just waited a little bit and we just said like, okay, let's wait a little bit. And then it's when we waited. So after a week, lucky enough, on Monday, when I was,
But now the next process, applying for citizenship.
Yeah.
Do you have to all do it individually?
Yeah. Yes. So yeah, because they are now 19, we have to be. But
adults.
You know, like we've missed a lot of family time and I think we are very ready to leave one another. We love each other. We are like, you know, like a small teenagers in the same house. Because like my kids, they've actually see me as a parent like of recently after the death of my parents. So, you know, it's actually something that even they embrace themselves, you know. So we love one another. And I think we can't just leave each other very soon. We still stuck for a while.
Okay, you're stuck together for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, listen, it's great news. Congratulations again. Eli Kiziyombe, who now has residency of this country, and in 3.5 years' time, you'll be back here celebrating your citizenship.
Yeah, and thank you so much, Ray, for the years of supporting me and for inviting me here, and I'm so grateful.
Okay. Thanks, Eli. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Oops, the daisy. Those magnificent men. Of a certain age will be singing that song in Bray on Saturday and Sunday, because the Bray Air Display happens again. It's an annual event, and we have three people to talk about. We've Ghazi Sadoun, MD of the Royal Jordanian Falcons, in studio. How are you doing, Ghazi?
Fine, thanks. Lovely to be back in Ireland again.
Good to see you. We have Shay Pardy, who's director of the Bray Air Display. How are you doing, Shay?
Delighted to be here also, thank you.
And on the phone, we've Kirsty Murphy, Blade 2 aerobatic pilot with the Blades. How are you doing, Kirsty?
Good afternoon. I'm sorry I'm not with you.
Yeah. So are we. I should have changed the lyrics to that song. Those magnificent men and women in their flying machines. But you still are unusual, because you're the only female RAF pilot to be selected for the Red Arrows ever.
That is true, yes. Yeah, I flew for the Red Arrows in 2010 and 2011.
Right. And the Blades are all retired Red Arrow pilots. Is that it?
We are, well, and we're all ex-military, ex-Royal Air Force pilots, but we have all also flown with the Red Arrows as well. So, yeah, our heritage is very much military and the Red Arrows.
And your family heritage is a flying heritage, isn't it?
Yeah, I was lucky. My dad was actually in the Royal Air Force. He was a navigator on the Tornado. So I grew up around it, really. So as a child, and I was about 13 when I decided I wanted to be a pilot. And it seemed like I wouldn't say an obvious choice, but it didn't seem unusual. It was only when I told my friends that I thought I was going to be a pilot in the Air Force that they all said, my God, what are you thinking about? We would never do that.
And you were doing Top Gun type stuff, weren't you? Just to bring it home to our listeners here.
All the Red Arrows pilots are full-time Royal Air Force pilots. So before they've been in the Red Arrows, they need to be quite experienced pilots. I'd been on the front line. I'd been flying the Tornado GR4 for several years. I've also been an instructor on the Hawk T1, which is actually the same aeroplane that the Red Arrows fly. So the Red Arrows, you don't just join the Air Force and be the Red Arrows. You have to be of a certain experience and qualifications to get in there. Yeah.
And how far back is the Irish connection?
So my dad was born in County Fermanagh.
Uh-huh.
I have a slight jinx with Irish displays and air shows. The last 3 years since I've been on the Blades, we've been invited to come over to Bray, and the weather's been terrible every time. So I am got everything crossed here.
Right.
So the weather this weekend is fantastic, okay. And we will be there.
Okay, stay with us, Kirsty. We'll go to Shay, who's obviously been looking very closely at the weather forecast for the weekend. What is the weather forecast, Shay?
We're hopeful. We are very hopeful. We talked before we came in with Ghazi. Bray is an unusual spot in that it has its own microclimate.
Does everywhere in the country have a microclimate? Seems.
No, genuinely, it has, and we will have good weather Saturday, Sunday.
Okay. It just seems to me to be getting bigger and bigger every year, the Bray Air Display.
It is, yeah. I talked previously with your producer that we started out 14 years ago with 20,000 people, and we had 140,000 last year over the 2 days.
That's good going.
We're bigger than Kildare in an All-Ireland final, or Offaly, or anybody else appearing. Not quite as big as Shane Lowry, but it is a big event, yes.
Yeah, huge event.
Huge.
And you've invited the lads from Jordan back. And Ghazi, you're the MD of the Royal Jordanian Falcons. You were a member of the team yourself previously.
That is true. I joined in 1996, my first year with the team, and I've been on and off with the team. And since my retirement from full-time service to the Jordanian Air Force, I've been the Director of Operations from 2014 onwards.
Okay.
This is my third time in Britain. The crack there seems to be getting bigger and bigger, and I hear the tills are ringing away.
Okay. Oh, now, just tell them what I did today. Well, I didn't do it. Duray did, Captain Duray Dal Lawama. But what sort of moves did he do?
You were a brave man today, Ray.
Yes,
what you
I
did.
Don't.
No, you, know, you,
I don't,
you come and
I didn't
don't do
much.
What you
I was
did
strapped
today.
In, yeah.
You saw a slow roll, you saw a loop, and you saw a slow roll into inverted, and you were brave all the way through.
Yeah.
You put up with it.
Brave little soldier.
Absolutely.
Did I experience G-force?
I think you experienced a maximum of 2.5 to 3 maximum G's, which is not that much.
I felt my face do that thing that just, you
sure,
know,
yeah,
yeah, I didn't,
yeah,
I didn't
around,
mirror.
Once you reach 3 G's plus, you feel that. In a usual air show, our team will pull anything between +7 to -3.
Okay. So I was flying, when I say I was flying, Durade was flying the plane upside down for how long?
I think around 30 seconds.
Right.
Yeah.
It is amazing. Have you done it, Shay?
I have. Don't particularly like it.
Do you not?
Yeah, that's ironic. I'm better off on the ground.
Because you're a pilot.
Yeah, but there's a lot of paperwork if we do any of that sort of stuff. So I work with Aer Lingus. It's much more sedate.
Right.
Yeah.
You're a commercial pilot.
Yes. Yeah.
I was thinking, I was saying there, Kirsty, earlier on, that after today's thrill, it's going to be difficult to get my feet back on the ground, metaphorically and physically. But it is such a mind-blowing experience. It's exhilarating. There's an adrenaline rush, and you're doing that on a regular basis. How does the rest of your life live up to it?
I think actually because we do it so frequently, it almost normalises it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really lucky. I'm just wanted to share there about being an airline pilot. I'm actually an airline pilot. The Blades are actually a registered airline, so people can come and fly with us in the same way as they've flown with you. And I really love doing those trips because it reminds me of how amazing my job is. Sometimes, I'm not saying I ever get bored of it. But, you know, sometimes because we do the display so frequently and we practice so much, you kind of forget just how exciting the flying is and how amazing it is. And then to take someone like yourself and do that first looped formation with them or a slow roll or maybe even one of the really crazy gyroscopic manoeuvres, it's absolutely brilliant. And it reminds me why I got into flying in the first place.
And the sick bags are important, aren't they?
Not in my cockpit. I decide that sick bags are a bit like umbrellas. If you have one with you, then you won't need to use it.
That's interesting. Are you excited about Top Gun Maverick next year?
Oh, very excited, obviously, along with every other pilot. There's something lovely about Top Gun. It's not entirely realistic in some areas, but it doesn't matter. It's just a brilliant film.
Yeah. What age were you when the first one was out? How many years ago is it now? 1986.
Yeah, no, I wasn't allowed to go and watch it when I was younger. I was too young to go and watch it, so I had to watch it on video once I got old enough.
I'm interested to know, was there any fear? Because you said earlier there that 13 was the age you decided that this was going to be your career choice. And was there fear at any stage?
Do you mean fear of the actual flying or of the job itself?
No, fear of flying and then the aerobatics. And I know you're probably in war situations, but the aerobatics seems more dangerous to me.
Well, I always say this to everyone. I've got a 3.5-year-old son, and there's no way I would do this job if I thought it was dangerous. So if I put that out there, you know, we mitigate any risks to the nth degree. I think it's far more dangerous getting in my car and driving on the motorway generally. But I think it's like any new skill where you're taking it to a really advanced level is that you start with the basics. You know, and when I first learned to fly, I wasn't doing the kind of manoeuvres that I'm doing these days. I was doing very basic flying, and the military flight training is a really stepped approach, and you just get more and more advanced as you get more and more comfortable. And then the same with when I moved on to the Extra 300, which is the aircraft that we fly now. I couldn't do any of these manoeuvres in the military aircraft because they're not designed for it. So we started off really high, practicing the slightly more dynamic manoeuvres, and you practice them over and over and over and over until you're so familiar with them that you feel comfortable bringing the height down until the point that you can fly them at the heights we do at Bray Air Show.
So people can see you doing it.
Exactly. It'd be no good me being a 5,000.
No. Yeah, you can go down and tell everybody about it. They'll be bored to tears. But
exactly.
Gazi, the Royal Jordanian Falcons, what's the history of the team?
The history started back in 1976. His Majesty King Hussein attended an air show in Abbotsford, Canada, and met a pilot there called David Ram. And this fellow was a geologist who took up aviation to study geology. And one thing led to the other. He became an aerobatic pilot. They met together, and His Majesty wanted to create a team in Jordan, flying the Pitts at the time, so that he can promote Jordanian peace and friendship through the art of aviation.
Uh-huh. And it's been going ever since.
It's been ever since. Our first air show was back in 1977. I believe we were in Qatar. And since then, for over 40 years, we've been doing air shows, covering all the way from the United States all the way.
And you do an annual tour?
Yes, usually we do an annual tour every summer between the months of June to September. And we hope to cover as much of Europe as possible because most of the tourism to Jordan is from Europe.
Yeah.
So Ireland, France, Germany, so on.
And the logistics of getting the four planes from Jordan to here?
Well, happily we are supported by the Royal Jordanian Air Force. We are a civilian team. We represent Jordan as a nation. However, to reduce costs and improve proficiency, our pilots are on loan from the Jordanian Air Force. They are our fighter pilots. And Christy said it all, really. I really can't add. The way we train, the way we perform, she just said it so perfectly there. And the team rotates, just like the Arrows. And but we do have also civilian pilots or retired military pilots who serve with us. And the Air Force provide transportation for our team. So we disassemble the aircraft, put them in Hercules, two aircraft in each Herc. We come over to Europe, reassemble the aircraft, and then we're flying Gypsy on the move. You know, every week we're somewhere.
Yeah, and I met all the lads who do maintenance, and they're hugely important to the team, aren't
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely. It's thanks to them that, that we can do what we're doing. Yeah. What's good, I could be the hottest pilot in the, on Earth, but without the engineers that we have. In fact, our general manager, Riyad Ayoub, has been with the team for 40 years of those 45.
Could I retrain now? I'm 54.
Yes.
I could.
Absolutely. There are no limits to your age. I once met a lady called Barbara in Norwich Airport. She was 89.
Yeah.
She took up flying at the age of 80. Her husband had passed away, left her a legacy. She picked up aviation and off she went flying.
Just for the three, there's a beautiful documentary I watched it the other night called The Man Who Wanted to Fly. It's about a guy called Bobby Coote from County Cavan, near where your dad was born, Kirsty. In his 80s, he buys one of those microlight things.
Yeah.
And he gets trained up and he flies from Newton Ards back down to Ballybor in County Cavan, and he lands in a field. He's cut out a runway on his field and his friends and family are there. And there's that scene at the end, Shay, where he goes, "I've lived my dream," or something to that effect, with his hands in the air.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, actually, if you pass your physical, if you're medically fit, you're fit to fly or practice flying or train flying.
Yeah. It's something else. It is something else. Any hairy moments, Kirsty? I know you say it's safer than driving to work, but any hairy moments for you over the years?
To be honest, you know, there are ones where you know that you haven't flown a manoeuvre as well as you wanted to, and it makes you lose a few heartbeats, but nothing that's going to really terrify me, I don't think.
Yeah.
Obviously, there have been incidents in the military that are a lot more serious, and I have had a few friends who've died. Certainly, you know, the whole idea behind aviation is that, especially these days, is any errors that are made are often human error rather than technical. The sort of science behind aviation and the technology now is incredible, and where you can go with an aeroplane now is phenomenal.
And the safety standards, of course, are very high, aren't they, in aviation?
Exactly. I think it's a really good thing, actually, that in aviation we really learn from our mistakes, and also we're generally, we call it a just culture, but if anybody makes any mistakes, certainly in our company, in our debrief, we're perfectly happy to stand there and say, "Look, I made a mistake and this happened." So, and then everybody learns from it and nobody makes the same mistake.
Open disclosure.
And that
Absolutely,
would be the same
yeah.
rate, though,
really
in
important.
The airlines as well.
Yes, same rate. Yeah. Very 140,000 you're expecting this weekend over the 2 days.
Certainly, yeah. We'd be up.
And whose idea was it back in 14 years ago?
Back in 2005, I would have met, there's two locals who have been stalwarts throughout, Mick Glynn and Dave Ford, who works with the council. When I grew up, long, long time ago now, there were a lot of smaller air shows, many of them throughout the summer, and there were none at that time. So aviation has been very good to me personally. And we very lucky and brave that it's close to Dublin, good public transport links, and probably more importantly in the last few years because of some of the land-based accidents, it's out over the sea. So all of the mitigants that Kirsty talked about, bar the blades and one other act, will remain over the sea at all times.
And the blades, do you travel from the UK on the day?
Yes, we are this weekend. We've got quite a busy weekend. We're over at Sunderland, and then so we're travelling over on Sunday morning to come and display.
Okay. Whereas the lads, the Royal Jordanian Falcons, they take off from Weston.
That's true.
On both mornings.
That's true. On both mornings.
Yeah. Well, anybody who's going along on Saturday and Sunday are in for a treat. You will see the Royal Jordanian Falcons. You'll see the blades, but Kirsty, she'll wave down to you. And there's loads more other stuff, isn't there? And there's things happening on the ground.
Absolutely. Full food, artisan market, great fun fair for family, etc. Young kids particularly have a defined attention span, so there's plenty going on. Yeah. I suppose just to finish off, Ray, it's a voluntary group that put this together, so we get great help from the Irish Aviation Authority, ATC, who manage and coordinate with Dublin Air Traffic Control, the council in Wicklow, etc. Without them, would be no show.
Okay. Shay, thanks very much. Good luck with it. Gandhi, thanks for this morning and thanks for coming
in. Thank you very much for having us.
And Kirsty, let's hope that the weather is good and the blades will arrive over this weekend. Great talk to all three of you. Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. See
you, Kirsty. Bye bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. And Owen has been on to us to alert people who are driving on the M50 where it begins to merge with the N11. He doesn't say if it's going north or south. But a duck is trying to lead five or six ducklings across the M50 where it begins to merge with the N11. And he says it's probably too late. But just warn folks out there, watch out for the ducks. Duck! Declan Scully is in all the papers today. He's a granddad and a taxi driver, and something very exciting happened in the back of his taxi a few days ago. How are you doing, Declan?
Grand, Ryan, not a bother. How are you?
Thanks for taking a call. I'm good. I'm good. You must be over the moon, are you?
Absolutely, yeah. To say the least. It's just still hasn't sunk in yet, you know?
And you work nights, and that's important for the story, isn't it?
Yeah, because I always work nights, you know. But I had only finished up on Monday morning at 6:30, you know, and I came home, I was knackered, and I went to bed. And, you know, yourself trying to sleep in that heat as it was, I think I was having nightmares. And then I got a call. My wife called me 7:15. She's thinking Stacey needs to go to the hospital. So first thing I'm thinking is, well, why isn't our partner Steve bringing her? Why am I bringing her? You know, I didn't know what time of the day it was. It was broad daylight. I thought I was being in bed hours. So I said, grand. So sauntered down the stairs. She's leaning over the radiator, screaming. Steve is having a yogurt after making a packed lunch for himself. Honest to God.
We better tell people that Stacey is heavily pregnant.
Stacey is heavily pregnant. She was due on the 27th, and on this Saturday she was due.
Okay, she was due, right.
But we had had a few false alarms, so straight away I thought, not a false alarm, you know?
Yeah.
So I said, okay, yeah, we go, you know, because I'm in the taxi, I can go on the bus lanes. So we go off, and I get as far as Fairview, and she said to me, Dad, I need to push. And Steve said, oh, no, don't push. He said, just breathe. And she let it lead us by him, basically let him know that she actually was breathing. And I said, love, you push away. Because I'm thinking, this is tomorrow or the next day. I'm absolutely not thinking there's anything sort of untoward going to happen, you know.
And where are you coming from?
I'm going from Kilbarrick.
Kilbarrick, and you're coming into Holles Street?
Holles Street, yeah.
Right, and what time is it again?
It's 8:15 in the morning.
Right, so it's pretty busy then. Traffic is pretty
bad. Absolutely. Yeah. And what happened was then I'm in a bus lane, but there was this big red bus.
No, we're losing you there. Hello, come back to us, Declan. There you go.
There you are.
You did something there, but you're back.
I just stood up. So there was five buses in front of me, so I couldn't get around them. So I'm stuck. And she said to me, Dad, I can't wait any longer. Call an ambulance. And I said, where are we getting ambulance from here now, love? You know, we're stuck in the middle of traffic.
I doubt that it was as calm as all that.
Steve, I never heard Steve. I thought he jumped out somewhere because he was so quiet, I couldn't believe it. You know, I thought it was only me and me taller in the car. And now and again I'd hear Steve saying, just breathe. And this is a guy now that won't get a needle. He will get a needle, faint. So we got to Colony Station, and I rang the emergency service, but now I have it on the hands of me, and the man's telling me, you know, well, this is what you need to do. Get her to lie down. Yep, okay, grand. Say she lie down. Yeah, okay, then. Okay, I'm doing that. And he said to me, have you got a shoelace? And I said, for what? He said, to tie the cord. I said, this baby's not coming out in this car. I'm going to get into Holles Street. And he said, no, I'd rather you stop and wait, you know, for the ambulance. I said, mate, I'm not stopping. I'll keep him going. But then he said to me, make sure she doesn't use the bathroom. And I said, you do know I've just told you that I'm actually she's in the back of the taxi here. But I think he was as nervous as I was.
Right.
So then he said, look, is there any show? Can you see anything? And I said, Steve, can we see anything here yet? No. And he said, no. And literally, you know, like the words just came out of my mouth. We got to the eternal flame there at the UFSD.
Yeah.
And he said to me, Declan, very, very calm, Declan, yeah, the baby's headed out. I said, I don't believe this. And at this stage, traffic is just bedlam, you know. So then I got that sort of Starsky and Hutch moment where I'm thinking, well, I can break all the lights here, you know, and come up on the, if I have to go on the wrong side or whatever, you know, who's going to say anything to me if they do stop me? So I'm shooting up along the South Quays, and I'm torn up, and I've just crossed the junction of Pierce Street, and panicking, I can hear Stacey letting out a roar, and then see if, you know, is you're okay, okay. So I pulled up outside Holles Street Hospital, and I jumped out of the car to get somebody to see, and said to me, Declan, the baby's in the back seat. And I look, and there's the baby lying on the back seat of the car with mother, Well, I was very relieved. I wasn't. I totally panicked then, you know. So lucky enough, the ambulance had been sent. He had been dispatched. He arrived behind us outside Hollis Street, and then two midwives. And in fairness, the two Porter guys, Shane was one of them, they came out. So they put the blankets around the car, and Ella May was born. Not a bother to her.
Oh, your granddaughter born in the back of your taxi.
Yep.
Declan, that's very special. That's very, very special.
Absolutely, yeah. You see, the thing was, it was a bittersweet day because my wife's grandmother, we had got a call at 25 past four on Monday morning. My wife got a call to say her grandmother passed away.
Oh.
And then Stacey texted at 4:30 to say, "Mama, I'm a neighbour."
The circle of life.
Absolutely, that's what we've been saying.
Yeah.
The circle of life, you know, and that's where I was there this morning. I was at the funeral this morning, you know, so she was 99, sure. She would have been 99 next month.
Oh,
so
well, that's she's a
she
great
was looking
life,
over,
she?
You know?
Yes, yeah. And that's why it's called Bella May,
yeah. Now, the only thing was that, you know, everybody was talking about the names and they're thinking May is for May, her nanny, you know,
yeah.
But. And they were saying, name her after Carr. Like my brother was saying, you have to call her Skoda, you know. And I said, no, that's not going to happen. But then the initials, lucky enough, Steve, her future husband is Sheen, because otherwise her initials would have been BMW, Bella May Whelan. So that was just a stroke of luck. That didn't happen.
Yeah. And did you, when you were doing that, to get from the IFSC to Hollis Street, did you put on your flashers and what were you doing?
I that's what I've done. Like, I probably hazard lights, you know. For some reason, I'm thinking, like, these are, like, blue lights, you know, the same thing, you know. But I probably, and I was just beeping. Every time I came to a set of lights or anything, I just beat the horn.
Yeah.
And I'm pointing into the back of the car.
Right.
And then I'm thinking to myself, but nobody can see. They don't see a Steve. She's lying down, so they don't know. They just see me, like, a lunatic waving out and put my hand out to one side, the other side, stop.
Yeah.
But I have to say, everybody did, you know. Even cyclists were stopping, you know. And I was just blessed, because if it had happened 5-6 minutes before, I definitely would have panicked, because you're thinking then, oh, you're supposed to clear the throat, you're supposed to lift the baby and hang them upside down and slap their arse.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff you see in the
movie. Yes, you're supposed to do, yeah, because you want to hear the baby crying, don't you?
Yeah,
to
make there, was sure no sound, no
oh, right.
thing, there was no sound.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of a panic, but as soon as that guy Shane came out and the other guy Willem, and the fair play to him, they hit her dignity, they put sheets and blankets around the car. And hence, you'll see the blue blanket on her. That was the ambulance man put that blue blanket on over the baby in the back of the car, you know.
Because I've heard that before, that, you know, you must have thought it sounded like crazy, but the shoelace around the umbilical cord.
Yeah. But that's what I'm thinking, you know. And I say to myself, but it was only when the head came out that I realised, oh, actually, this isn't a joke.
This is
not going to get to Hollis Street, you know. This is for real now. There's maybe Ted here, you know. Because I really didn't think. I just thought, yeah, okay, Stacey, here we go again. Bring you over to Hollis Street and we'll be back tomorrow.
How is Stacey?
She's brilliant. She was home the next day.
And Bella May?
And Bella May is home and all. She's. I gave her a fourth bottle about 10 minutes after she was born. The first thing, when I parked my car and I went up, and she's tongue out like a snake, and I had to give her a fourth bottle. She's been brilliant, you know. She's an absolute.
How many grandchildren have you got?
That's my second. Lewis is Stacey's fourth child. He's four.
Right.
You know, so he's a big brother now, you know.
Yeah.
And he's living up to that handle fairly well.
It's all very, like, you know, because as a taxi driver, I'd imagine weird things and crazy things happen in the car. But to have your own daughter deliver your granddaughter in your taxi, it's just
and it was so surreal, because when it happened, and I'm standing here looking at the baby in the back of the car waiting for anybody to come, you know, because when I got out first, it was two women. I didn't realise they were foreign women. I don't know what part of the hospital they walked in, but they were midwives, and I was saying to them, sorry, he is midwives, and they just were looking at me like they're 10 heads. And so as I started and tried to go up the stairs, that's, you know, when I was panicking, do I leave him, the baby sitting there, do I go back to the baby? And lucky enough that the partner, Shane, that you know, they see me, they came out. So, and then about 2 minutes later, the midwives arrived, you know. But it was just, I remember standing back thinking, there's loads of people around, and I'm just standing back here. And I went home then, later on that day, and we couldn't go up to visit on the evening. And I said, I'm going to try to have an hour's sleep. And I went up, and I was lying down, and about 10 minutes, I just kept waking up laughing. Honestly, I was just laughing and thinking to myself, did you actually have a baby? I didn't know what I was going to say. Did I dream it? Honest to God, and here it was. Oh, it did happen, didn't it? You know, and I'd pick my phone up and I'd look at my phone to see a picture. Oh, yeah. And then I'd tell you, and I just couldn't. It wasn't registering, you know.
So the combination of the adrenaline rush and the sleep deprivation and all of that just added to that. Yeah, it was surreal, surreal. A great story for Bella May when she grows up.
Absolutely, yeah.
Declan, great talking to you today.
No problem.
Congratulations. And pass on our best to Stacey and Bella May and Steve. See ya.
Thanks, Ray. Take care.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Summer is here and there's an abundance of fruit in the bushes and trees and shrubs. And what do you do with all of that fruit, all those berries? Well, you eat it or you make jam. Louise Lennox is with us from foodoppy.com and she's here to tell us how to make jam. Is it just fruit and sugar? No?
Basically, it's fruit and sugar, yeah.
Okay, that's it. Thanks very much, Louise.
But, as always, there's a lot of science behind it and the easier things in life normally go wrong for you.
Yes, yeah.
I've been making jam, like, when we were kids. I think anyone raised in the 80s and 90s, you were just shoved into fields and told to go pick things if they didn't poison you or to eat them. So we've been making it for years and then, you know, for work as a pastry chef, never bought in jam, always homemade. And I think it's only now I really appreciate it because it is a little bit of a lost art. And it wasn't until my son finished school there a few weeks ago when all parents were feared for the summer and they had a picnic. And I said to the moms, oh, well, you know what, I'll make some jam and I'll make some scones. And they said, what do you mean you're going to make jam? And I said, no, I'll be back later on and I'll make jam. It's really quick to make. And they were eating it and they like loved it, but they couldn't believe it was really fast to make. And I do forget.
You see, I have this memory of my granny making jam, but it was a long process, drawn out process. Why has it changed?
But there wasn't dishes long back in the day, a long process, because there are easier things out there. So I was a baking snob, right? And so you can buy, you know, jam sugar and it's got pectin added into it. And I decided to make life hard for myself for all those years. And like that, I'd be stirring it and you'd be checking it on a saucer in a freezer. And sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. It depends on how much pectin's in the fruit. That's what makes it set. And it was very hit and miss and sometimes you could overcook it. So it puts you off. And then one day I was reading Mary Berry and it was like Confessions of a Pastry Chef. And she's like, I use jam sugar. I was like, Mary Berry uses jam sugar. I'm going to use jam sugar. And I have never gone back to making the old way. I do not put that kind of hassle on myself, especially now that I'm a mother. I don't have the time.
Where does one get jam sugar?
In shops.
Everywhere?
Everywhere.
Right.
And some people are kind of going, is it normal sugar? It is. All they've done is add in pectin into it. Pectin, you get it in apples. It's in most fruit, but some is high and low. So strawberry jam would be low in pectin, so it wouldn't really set for you. It'd be quite runny. So that's sometimes, like years ago, you'd see them matching. A lot of stuff had apple bases in it because it's high in crab apples and quinces.
Or high in pectin.
High in pectin, yeah. And and the slightly more underripe fruit, whereas I think there's more flavour when you make fruit, like strawberries, you know, at the moment now, they're full of flavour. I was in the shops of the day and there was cherries and they were selling them off because they were just about overripe and there was like 40 cents for a punnet of them. And I was buying loads, like a crazy one. So I was like, I'm going to make jam with it.
Yes.
And it does, it lasts. The beauty about making homemade jam is I don't like the shop-bought stuff. Most of the shop-bought stuff, I'm not going to say all of it because there are some lovely artisan ones out there, they're really high in sugar. And you can't, it's like food that's overly salted, too much sugar, you can't taste it at all.
Yeah.
And when you do start making your and experimenting with flavours, it's very hard to go back to shop-bought stuff. So there's a story behind this jam.
Gooseberry jam, just before we move on to your jam, was my grandmother's favourite.
Was it?
Gooseberry jam.
Did you like it?
I did. It looked odd because most jams, as I'm looking around me here, they're sort of dark colours. Yeah. Now, and then you had this green stuff.
Yeah, and we eat by colour.
We do.
Yeah.
So putting green stuff onto your bread.
You think
bread,
it's going to be bitter.
Yes. Yeah. But it was actually lovely.
Yeah, when you can get over the fact there's green
stuff. Have you ever made gooseberry jam?
I have. I made it with my mum. So my mum, anything that can be chutneyed or preserved, or she's amazing at making apple jelly and marmalades. So listen, if it grows, I've picked it. My granddad always grew gooseberries. So gooseberry jam when I was a kid. And I had the same thing as you going, that's a bit green and it's lumpy. I don't know if I want to eat it. Anything green on bread normally means turn in the bin. It's mouldy. But last year when I was in with you. I have to tell everyone the story. So after the show, I was chatting, and I tell you I normally kill everything, but I was growing figs for the last couple of years. And then, so I lived in an apartment in town, had no garden. And so then my dad, so I said to my dad, can I basically use your garden? You're going to water my fig tree and we'll share the figs. And so my sister called and she goes, oh my God, we've eaten so many figs. They're lovely. And I was like, but they're my figs. So I got one. So I took my plant back. And didn't fruit for years. I think my plant was in a snot with me. So last year, after a lot of research on the internet, I got like a bumper crop of figs, and one of them weighed 7 ounces of fig. It was ginormous. So I made jam with them. And you were surprised to hear that you could grow figs.
Yes.
So I made jam with it, and I brought you in the jam today from last year.
So it's fig and raspberry jam.
Yeah. Well, you see, I didn't have a lot of figs because I wanted to eat some of them as well. So I wanted to pad it out. So it's mainly fig, but I did put in some raspberries into it as well. And that's the great thing about jam. You can actually experiment a little bit. But as always, I do have...
I'm okay for butter. I'll just have...
Oh, you don't like butter?
Well,
you don't like butter? Is that because you're running a lot?
No, just I like it in certain things.
Well, there is butter in the scones. So here, and I'll give you a superhero napkin.
Okay,
I've got
thank
a son
you very much.
And he loves superheroes.
So this is...
So that's fig and raspberry jam. Now, there is a little pastry chef secret I've added into that. And I only discovered this a couple of years ago when I was doing a science. Myself and Ashton were over in the UK training. Do you love
so
it?
So delicious, yeah.
That's good. It looks like you've got lipstick on your mouth as well now. The natural
red
fruit.
And I apologise to people because I know some people are grossed out, for want of a better phrase, by people eating on the radio.
You didn't make too much jaw noise,
no,
though.
No, I didn't on purpose.
My sister, actually, that freaks her out. I'm not allowed to sit beside her because my my jaw clicks, drives her mad. And it actually puts her in a bad mood, so we sit opposite sides of the table.
I never noticed that your jaw clicks.
Neither did I. Didn't know it was a thing.
Is it a condition? No.
I hope not.
That is delicious.
Yeah, it is. It really, when I say it's worth the hassle, I mean, so I made this strawberry jam this morning to prove you can make it really fast. And so, you know, fresh
strawberries.
You made
this today already?
The strawberry jam.
Yeah.
So all this is, it's strawberries with... The jam sugar I was telling you about, and my little secret ingredient. So I put real vanilla into this, and I just leave it in the pot and let it kind of mature as the flavour goes. A bit drippy there. And but malic acid, and I think a lot of people probably have never heard of this before. So it naturally occurs in apples, kind of gives it that sourness, and in rhubarb. So I brought you in some to taste.
Malic acid.
Yeah, I know you went flying now, earlier on, but this might be a little bit scarier.
Which should I take first? The strawberry and vanilla,
maybe,
or the malic acid?
Enjoy the strawberry first. So malic acid, and so you know, of course you know I do the show, the rest, we've done it together before, but so Marco Pierre White used to always say, oh my God, I don't have a sweet tooth, not really into desserts. And then I did this training course and they use malic acid. So it's kind of like sugar for desserts. It's a natural flavour enhancer in fruit. And what it does is it makes you produce more saliva. Now, not enough that you're going to dribble when you talk, but by putting a little bit in the food, it brings out the flavour profiles. But the more saliva you have when you eat food, it goes down into a chemical, goes onto your taste buds, and makes it taste better. I have proved it works. So
it accentuates the flavours. Does it
makes it more delicious. And
yes,
if you start reading the back of labels, it's actually in like a lot of food you wouldn't realise, even in toothpaste.
Right. Name it again.
Malic acid. You can get it on the internet. But if you put a little sprinkling in jam, commercial jams all have it as well. It makes a massive difference.
That's strawberry and vanilla. Does that have some of the magic malic acid?
And actually, and the default on computer is magic acid. On the restaurant, they do slide me going, if you put that magic acid in the food again. But Marco, Pierre White and Rachel Allen, when I started putting in the fruit, they did say it had this amazing flavour. And it really is. It adds in
acid.
That. It does.
Any side effects?
Makes you just happy. Happy and chatty. No, it's natural. It comes from apples.
No hair on my nose. That's delicious. That strawberry and vanilla is just...
It's beautiful. And
it beats the raspberry and fig.
Yeah, so I'm a strawberry person.
Yeah.
I love it. And you can make it when fruit isn't in season. I actually say freshly frozen Irish berries, they're picked at the height and they freeze them, is just as good as using them now. So I make jam throughout the year. In wintertime, I make it with the frozen strawberries. And it's easier to make
and
it
you
because
get them
they're
cheap
bulky. Yeah, you get them cheap now. So now is the
people
time
are going
to
ask, the overripe ones, are they better for jam?
I use when they're just ripe, because when they go overripe, they do go a little bit sour and they start to fizz.
Okay.
So I would say, if you're going to eat it, it's good enough enough for jam, but now use the really ripe stuff, because by using the jam sugar that's got the pectin into it, you don't need to worry about putting loads of pectin in like our grandmothers would have worried. So jam probably wasn't as flavoursome back then.
Right, this malic acid then.
Magic acid.
Magic,
makes
magic.
Everything
malic,
taste good.
It's malic magic.
Am I going to taste some?
Yes, yeah, so that's what you want me to do.
Dip your finger a little bit, just dip a little bit in your finger, not too. Go on, just do it. It's okay.
It's very odd.
I know, but it looks a little bit like sugar.
Whoa!
Yeah, so it's very sour. Whoa. And it's very bitter. But as you'll discover, you're going to start producing a lot of saliva. I've got napkins here if it gets messy.
Is that in that thing, you know, what the sherbet dip?
Yeah, yeah, it's in
it
loads
like
of stuff.
It tastes like sherbet dip.
Yeah, it's really sour. But by putting a little bit in the fruit, it does taste good. But like in its natural state, because I go into schools with kids and I, you know, teach them about food and science, and they love when you get the teachers to taste that, because we get the teacher to take a spoonful and they're nearly passed out on the floor with the shock of the magic acid, slightly shaking.
Foodoppie.com, and that's growing and expanding.
Foodoppie, yeah. Like, so a lot of people don't actually realise. They just think I do, you know, the restaurant. We actually do food education and science education courses for teachers, primary school teachers at summertime. So called CPD courses, and it's all online, and so we teach you how to make a pasta bridge and teach kids engineering and teach you how to make a solar oven out of a pizza box, which teaches about like the environment and sun heat energy. So it's growing, and I'd say another year or two hopefully we'll be where we want to be, which is global.
I was thinking about you recently because we were in the Wineport Lodge.
Oh, the Wineport
in Glasson,
the Wineport.
And that's where the restaurant used to be shut.
Yeah,
I was thinking,
love
who was the most awkward of all the contestants?
Bar you. I can say it because you're in front of me. Do you know who drove me mad? And he won't mind me saying this because I told him to his face. Michael Healy-Ray drove me mad.
Did he?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. He wanted to make a Guinness ice cream, and cooking is a science, and I was trying to explain to him, if you put a full pint of Guinness into your custard mixture, it's going to be, it's just going to be icy. It's not going to be a nice, lovely ice cream. And he didn't believe me. He goes, I don't care, just put it in. And I was like, okay. But because I need to keep my own reputation of actually knowing how to make ice cream, not normally Guinness, I made it the way I would have done, by reducing it down. That reduced down the alcohol. So came to tastings, and he tasted his one, which was awful, tasted mine, which was good. And because he was so... didn't want to be proven wrong, we went with his disgusting one. And I actually can't remember what they thought of it, but he definitely, we kind of were at loggerheads that day. We made up in the end, though.
Clash of personalities.
Do you know what it was? It was just, I was trying to explain to him that I knew what I was talking about and he didn't listen to me. Yeah. But that's okay. Sure, isn't that what politicians do?
Is it back? Is it gone?
We filmed it. We filmed it in March and April, and I had the dodgiest fake tan on, so I really hope they didn't get my hands on that one. I was half asleep putting it on that night. So you know the way they say orange fingers, they're horrendous. So it's back in September, October.
Great.
So hope you can't see my hands on that.
Okay.
Lots
the restaurant back, that's on TV3, foodoppie.com if you're interested in getting Louise into your school to talk about the science of food and other things. That's
Louise and Aisling, don't have to remember Aisling, she's the brains behind this as well. Blonde
Louise,
hair.
Delicious. And thanks for bringing in your malic magic acid as well. And enjoy the rest of the evening. That's it from us. Sarah McInerney is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.